Good. My name is Joe Dake. I'm a professor of public health at the University of Toledo, and I'm going to moderate your session today. So we have four speakers. We're going to do questions after each speaker. So rather than waiting for them all at the end. Our first presentation, actually I'll read it from here because it's different on my sheet. Above average wellness policy scores not related to district demographic characteristics in Minnesota. Our first presenter is Carly Hansen. Carly is a second year public health graduate student at Temple University. Previous to matriculation, she was assisting research at the University of Minnesota under Dr. Susie Nanny and Dr. Larry Ahn. Her research interests include childhood obesity policy research, social determinants of health, development of tailored health messages, and photo elicitation interviewing. Carly, thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Carly, and on behalf of the team at the University of Minnesota, I'm proud to share our research today on above-average wellness policy scores not related to district demographic characteristics in Minnesota. Before I begin, I'd quickly like to thank and acknowledge the team members who are unable to attend today, particularly Pam Hoffman for her data collection and preliminary analysis, Cindy Davey for her statistical analysis and reporting, and Dr. Susie Nanny for providing the opportunity to perform this research under her mentoring and guidance. And I'd also like to thank our funder, the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, and I have no conflicts of interest to report. Despite the recent decline of childhood obesity recorded nationally, one-third of our children are still overweight and obese. And the rates of obesity are disproportionately higher among minority and low-income children, as well as rural youth. Based on the amount of time that students spend in schools, schools have proven to be a great venue to provide healthy environments and support the development of healthy behaviors. Knowing this, and in response to addressing our children's health, particularly among children of low socioeconomic status, in the 2006-2007 school year, all school districts that participated in the federal meal school program were mandated by the Child Nutrition and Women, Infants and Children Reauthorization Act of 2004 to develop school wellness policies. Now, building on this mandate, the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act of 2010 set expectations for school districts to continuously implement and evaluate their wellness policies. Research has shown that the implementation of school wellness policies have been associated with healthier environments at schools and healthier behaviors among students. And knowing that some populations are at more risk for obesity than others, it's important to reach out to these groups. Research has shown that differences exist on the quantity and the quality of implementation in school wellness policies based on factors such as percentage of students eligible for free reduced lunch, percentage of minority students, the size of the school, as well as the school location. Through the use of the Wellness School Assessment Tool, WellSAT, researchers have been able to evaluate the implementation of these wellness policies. So based on the evidence that school wellness policies foster healthier behaviors and support, provide healthier environments for students, and that there are differences that exist regarding the development of these school wellness policies based on demographic characteristics, our team at Minnesota wanted to know what demographic characteristics are associated with Minnesota school districts that implemented more and stronger wellness policies that exceeded the state average school wellness policy score. For our methods, we randomly sampled 143 Minnesota school district websites in spring 2012. We examined five key policy areas using the WellSAT instrument, and we selected four demographic characteristics hypothesized to be associated with schools' development of wellness policies. Following random sampling, our sample contained slightly more white students and less minority students compared to the state average. But beyond that, looking at the percentage of students who are eligible for free or reduced lunch, and also looking at school district location and size, our sample was quite comparable to the state. As mentioned previously, We use the WellSet instrument to examine individual school wellness policies. And there are five key policy areas that we looked at. Now, first, the WellSet instrument is a coding system that scores wellness policies using a predetermined list of policy criteria and key policy areas. Each policy area contains a particular number of criteria that is graded on two components, comprehensiveness and strength. So more specifically, comprehensiveness is looking at the number of policies stated within the policy area that we are looking at. Strength is really looking at the specific language of the individual policy. So a strong policy would include words such as will, shall, must, comply, and enforce, whereas a weak policy included words such as suggested, recommended, or optional. Again, we are examining five key areas. The first, nutrition education and wellness promotion. And the screenshot that we have up right now is the actual WellSet tool. And this was used throughout each of the areas. For this area, it examined the nutrition education and promotion of healthy behaviors, and it included nine criterions. So down here in the lower left-hand side, you'll see one of them. And we are looking to see whether or not the policy plan included a specific mention to provide nutrition curriculum for each grade level. And then on the right-hand side includes the grading regimen, comprehensiveness, and the strength. And again, we use this process for each area. The next area we examined included standards for USDA school meals. This examined whether or not nutrition standards and access to school meal programs were addressed, as well as the environment, time, training, and strategies for a meals program. Next, nutrition standards for competitive foods addressed whether or not the policy plan stated to limit sugar, fat, sodium, and calorie content while regulating food sold outside of the lunch program, so in school stores or in vending. Physical education and physical activity evaluated whether or not the policy plan addressed time allotment, equipment and facilities, curriculum of physical education, as well as the training for the physical education teacher. This area also included whether or not physical activity opportunities were stated as available outside of the school. And then finally, we examined evaluation. And this addressed whether or not a plan was established for policy implementation, evaluation, revision, and that the policy communicated progress to a specific audience. Now, using the WellSet tool, our team configured Minnesota's wellness score. Something to note, currently there is not a benchmark to compare what ideal scores are. So to provide context, for how Minnesota is performing, we compared our wellness policy scores to a national representative sample from 2010-2011 that was compiled by Bridging the Gap. And overall, Minnesota is pretty consistent with the U.S. Minnesota implemented more wellness policies in school meals and less in physical activity and education. However, what we found really interesting is looking at the strength score, the U.S. had a much higher strength score compared to Minnesota. For our methods, for our independent variables, they are collapsed into two categories. First, geography was dichotomized as rural versus non-rural, which included town, suburban, and city as non-rural. We did this due to the low sampling of city school districts. Minority enrollment included less than 5% was equivalent to low, greater than or equal to 5% was grouped as medium or high. The percentage of free reduced lunch participants, low or medium, was less than 20%. High would be equal or greater than 20%. And then total enrollment, small would be less than 2,000 students, medium or large would be greater than or equal to 2,000 students. Now, minority enrollment, free reduced lunch, and total enrollment, those cut points were all determined by previous literature. For our statistical analysis, we used chi-square to test for associations between the key policy areas and district characteristics. We also used Fisher's exact test for some comparisons due to due to the small cell count. And overall, we had a high inter-rater reliability. So on to our results. And again, we are asking what demographic characteristics are associated with Minnesota school districts that exceeded the state average school wellness policy score. As an overview of our sample's characteristics, 73% of school districts had a small enrollment, 90% of school districts had a high percentage of students eligible for free reduced lunch, 68% of schools had a large minority enrollment, and 64% of school districts were located in rural areas. And again, we were looking at comprehensiveness and strength. On average, 38% of school districts exceeded the state average of developing wellness policies, with the lowest percentage of schools exceeding the state average of implementing policies in school meals. The strength score of the number of districts that exceeded the state average score held a similar pattern. Now, looking at our first hypothesized variable, percentage of free reduced lunch participants, across the board, schools with higher percentage of students who received free or reduced lunch implemented more policies, but results were only statistically significant in two areas, school meals and evaluation. This also held similar when looking at the strength score, and only one area was statistically significant, and that again was in evaluation. Now, looking at our next three hypothesized variables, they're found to be not significant. This included minority enrollment, location, and enrollment size. They're all found to be insignificant. Income was the only statistically significant driver that was behind the difference of policy implementation. So overall, according to our results, schools with a higher percentage of students eligible for free reduced lunch received better wellness policy scores in all five key policy areas, with significance in two areas, school meals and evaluation. Why might this be? Well, we know that schools receive extra funding to support low-income students. But to receive this funding, schools must meet federally defined nutrition standards. Therefore, when it comes to the development of school wellness policies, it really isn't that much work for schools if they're already abiding by federally defined nutrition standards. In addition, the Child Nutrition and Women, Infants, and Children Reauthorization Act of 2004, as well as the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act of 2010, really built on these policies specifically addressing health disparities among low-income children by mandating that schools must abide by these standards to receive the additional funding. Now, this is nothing new. This has been noted in previous literature. There are two national studies performed, one by Nanny Release in 2013 and another one by Bridging the Gap in 2009, that show that districts and schools serving a higher percentage of low-income students had better vending policies, and this was also found by Bridging the Gap for stronger policies in competitive foods, as well as physical activity and evaluation. And there are two states that have found similar results as well, Utah and Connecticut, and this specifically was looking at the comprehensiveness. And so they had stronger language that was used. Now, with only one variable producing significance, we know there must be something else going on out there that's associated with the development of school wellness policies. There are more questions to ask. According to literature, there are other factors that may affect the implementation of wellness policies. Research has shown that the lack of support and resources, such as funding and time, and also assigning accountability of implementation affect whether or not school districts successfully implement policies. Research has also shown that increased perception or knowledge on the importance of school wellness policies among school administration, teachers, and parents could potentially result in a higher amount of schools that fully implement school wellness policies. And this is especially important among superintendents, who are often noted as the drivers behind school wellness policies. And this was noted yesterday during a presentation on the School Superintendents Association. And finally, literature has also shown that the more diverse a wellness committee is at the school, the stronger the wellness policy scores are. For strengths and limitations, first, a strength of this study is that it does show a relationship between income and wellness policy score, and it adds the body of supporting literature. Secondly, Minnesota's wellness policy score was similar to the national score and potentially provides insight into other states' success at implementing policies. And finally, most literature in this area is dependent on self-reported data, and therefore the use of an independent third-party data collector in the study reduces biases that are often found with self-reported data. As for limitations, again, we were limited to 4 variables, and only 1 showed significance in 2 policy areas. Second, our sample had slightly less minorities represented and more whites compared to the state. Also, the sample did not include our 2 largest school districts that include Minneapolis and St. Paul, which could have changed the representation of minority enrollment and free reduced lunch participation. And we only included public schools. However, I must note that this research is actually continuing and they're reaching out to more school districts, and those results will be available soon. Third, during data collection, state funding that had partially been used and distributed by county was partially used to support the development of wellness policies. So this was reduced and it could greatly affect our findings. And also, the study took place prior to the revision of Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, which may have encouraged implementation of more wellness policies, particularly in physical education and physical activity. And then also, another limitation is, although the study took place prior to developed, and they may be stated on the website, we don't know what's happening in the schools. For further research, we strongly recommend to investigate other factors that are associated with the development of school wellness policies. And these were mentioned earlier, so looking at funding, looking at support, looking into the past experience of the superintendent. We need to continue to review, evaluate, and revise wellness policies to make sure that they do fit with the needs of that school district. And also, it's important that we do this with the revision of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010. We also need to examine barriers to implementation and revision of wellness policies. And finally, we need to continually build evidence to examine the relationship between school wellness policies, student behavior, and academic performance so that we can create a healthier, stronger environment for our children. Thank you.
We have time for a few minutes of questions.
So is it a state requirement that school districts have a wellness policy? Right now there's nothing that is coded. We're going by the 2 federal mandates.
Just to clarify, these policies were at the district level?
Correct.
They were not building specific, right?
Right. We are looking at the districts within Minnesota, so the schools were actually within the districts. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sir, as you look at graduation rates or academic progress in those schools in terms of those that are handling your progress and whether that was related to outcomes around the schools?
That is a really great question. That is something that was not investigated at the time, but would definitely be something that we could look into the future.
That's a quick question. Has environmental health or kind of school building conditions at all been talked about as part of being the wellness policy?
From my understanding, I actually do not know if that has been part of the current discussion. We're specifically looking at areas that were defined by the WellSat instrument that was used. And so this was built specifically addressing what the Child Nutrition and Women, Infant and Children Reauthorization Act looked at and Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act.
There's another question.
Yeah, I was wondering why you didn't include Minneapolis and St. Paul.
That was part of the random sampling, and okay. Just by a random chance, they weren't part of this. However, there will be a report coming out that will include the Minneapolis and St. Paul, which could greatly change our findings. Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay. Well,